You're listening to a podcast from 702.
Plus 702.
Open line.
See, this thing is playing tricks with me. Just as it goes over to 11, my mind tells me it's 11 o'clock, eh? I've got the energy of someone who's clearly enjoying being at work, Abel. But secretly, I am giving Freudian slips here by demonstrating that I actually was hoping that it's the last hour of work and it's almost Chayla time. Richard, good morning. Welcome to the show.
Hi there, Eusebius. Yesterday you had a very interesting program about artificial intelligence and how to unbias it when it was doing anything to do with people. You know, I think you can unbias it if it's running a steel plant, but not so easy if it's selecting people or making statistics for medical or whatever. But I just had a little bit of a naughty thought. I mean, if you really got it totally unbiased, if you got a really good program that did the algorithm and the statistics and everything, and you said, please select a Springbok rugby team, do you think it would come up with seven men and seven women and one transgender, or how would it work?
I don't know, but I wonder why you ask, and what's the naughty thought embedded in it?
Okay, well, the naughty thought is this. From what it didn't come up yesterday, but I was wondering about it. One of the issues that came up was that you had more male chartered accountants than female chartered accountants.
Mm.
But what is to say that it should be 50-50? You know, people's brains do work slightly differently. I mean, if you look at one of the things that always amazes me is music. Not just classical music, any music. If you look at who composed it, you'll find you can hardly find one woman composer, and yet you find lots and lots of authors. So you can't say, well, it was a bias because men have been involved in music. If anything, over the last 100 years or so, more women have been encouraged to play a musical instrument probably than men. But it seems to me that men have something in their genetics that makes them able to compose music. And maybe it's similar with accounting. Maybe men just have a better way of doing it. And so you're going to land up with more men than women. And how do you account for that when you tell the software what to do?
You're partly right, Richard, but in the history of discrimination, you obviously are wrong. Some differences between individuals as well as groups will be innate. And when they are innate, then perfect representativity demographically does not make sense. But what we know in the real world, outside of your theoretical reasoning, is that as a matter of fact, women are underrepresented in certain kinds of careers, like engineering, like accounting, not because you and I have a greater propensity via Mother Nature being a misogynist to be able to do math better than Laura and Danae, but because society has imposed evidence-insensitive assumptions about the girl child's ability to be numerically as dexterous as Richard in Victory Park and Eusebius in Sandton. So if we can find genuine instances where it is innate that a certain group of people, say left-handed people, have just been endowed by Mother Nature with a greater propensity to play rugby, then they should be picked by an objective, quote-unquote, algorithm for that team to represent the country. But I'm sorry, the garden variety cases of discrimination is not based on innate differences between the people that dominate each of those sectors that we should talk about in the real world. When it comes to engineering, when it comes to maths, when it comes to science, when it comes to who the middle management is in corporate South Africa, when it comes to top-tier leadership in corporate South Africa, white people are not endowed with greater capacity for economic thought and for business leadership than black people. It is the unsubtle intervention of a racist structure that makes it less likely for a black woman to become a CEO than a mediocre white man. That's got nothing to do with biology. It's got everything to do with the history and politics of prejudice.
I absolutely accept that in the instances you're giving, but I think one also has to always keep in mind, and particularly when it comes to race, I don't think there are any differences, really. I do think that there are maybe differences in obviously the way that people are treated, but also in the kind of background from which they come, and they pick up certain things even at a young age. But be that as it may, there are other areas where there definitely is a difference in capability. And as I say, I mean, the one that always stands out to me the most is in composing music. And, you know, I don't think women have been discriminated against, and certainly black people haven't. I mean, a lot of music is composed by black men, but you don't find much music composed by black women.
Yeah, but that's not because black men have got greater rhythm and better musical ears. It is precisely because there's less opportunity for women to do so, because misogyny also benefits black men. Put white people out of the equation for a second. There are many parts of life in the world and in our societies in the world where black men disproportionately do better than women, not because there are certain propensities within the black male species, as it were, that Mother Nature has in disproportionate amounts gifted black men compared to black women. It's very simple. It's called misogynoir. It is the particular discrimination against black women that is rife across the globe. In a parallel universe where a different social history played out, it might have been black men who have less of a monopoly when it comes to being executive producers in music, composers, etc. I think, Richard, when all is said and done, what you are doing is giving far too much credit to biology for what should be a morally awkward conversation about human decisions that are responsible for these kinds of incredibly, incredibly discriminatory behavior in terms of perpetuating the power of those who've always enjoyed being the only ones at the dinner party.
Yeah, we'll have to disagree to some extent then, because I believe there are differences in gender, in the way genders think. And it's not always just a case of being biased against a gender or a color. It very often is. But I think we have to be very careful not to throw the baby out with the bathwater.
It's a question of picking your examples. But I want to push this with you, because I think this is a critically important national moment. Let's take an example such as elite Kenyan athletes. A combination of geography, by the way, not biology, geography, and probably also biology, would explain the dominance of Kenyan runners when it comes to long-distance running in the world and the history of long-distance running. So that example partly serves you. And I say partly because geography is something that has nothing to do with your innate potential, which is why people from elsewhere in the world may also train at altitude and find themselves every now and then beating a Kenyan runner, although it's unlikely that they will do so. But that example serves your point. But Richard, let's just keep it real, man. The question is whether the majority, empirically, the majority cases of discrimination by and large can be explained away by science, or the behavior of human beings who like to dominate one another. When all is said and done, which do you think is more often the explanation for lack of representativity in life? Is it mostly science, or is it mostly domination? What do you think?
Well, I think it's mostly domination. I don't think that, you know, one could argue too much about it. But I think part of the problem then is that when you reach the very peaks of certain endeavors like long distance running, you find that certain people are innately better than others for whatever reason. They might have been born at a high altitude. There may be a genetic part to it, because their ancestors have lived at that altitude and they've given them a better cardiovascular system. But one has to be careful about.
About what? One doesn't have to be careful. One doesn't have to be careful. All that one needs to do is to accept that even if, Richard, and this is my final point, and then I'll give you 30 seconds to wrap, because we've got billions of people who want to call in today. Here's the thing. Even if you are right that Mother Nature discriminates, you still need to take stock of why your states, the world over, do not give everyone the same opportunity to exploit whatever latent potential they have.
Yeah, that's clear. But I think you also got to be, there are certain professions. If you look at it, when you get to the very, very top of certain scientific, in any case, if you look at the Nobel Prizes for science and physics and so on, you'll find that a disproportionate number of them are Jewish people. Now, my own thought on that is that they probably, like the Kenyans, have a higher proportion of the extreme level of intelligence that's needed to get there. And to say, no, we've got to have 50-50 here, we can't have those guys dominating, then you're going to curtail the advancement of science, which, is probably not a good thing.
I've got nothing more to say, Richard. Honestly, I've maxed my lucidity for the day. If you still don't get what I'm saying, then I'm afraid in your words we'll have to agree to disagree.
Well, we'll just have to do that because I don't think you're getting what I'm saying. But anyway.
No. I get what you say. I disagree with what you say. There's a profound difference.
Fair enough.
Thank you, sir. Okay, Richard in Victory Park. Mark in Balfour Park. Good morning.
Hello, Eusebius. I have a slightly different discussion. Yesterday, a guy called into Joanne's show. His name was Andrew. And he started off making a generic comment about how he thinks Cyril Ramaphosa should come out and make more clear statements about how Zuma is going to be prosecuted and da-da-da-da-da. He then went on to say Cyril's very bad at communicating and Cyril must also come out and reassure us all that race doesn't matter. And then he started waffling and going on, and then he made his point again saying, Cyril must tell us all that race doesn't matter. And I just wanted to respond to him as a white person, because Joanne said, she took him on, and she said, listen, firstly, if you think the president doesn't communicate, then maybe you should read a bit more. But secondly, race does matter. Maybe it doesn't matter to you as a white male, but it matters to a lot of black people. Mm-hmm. And then he started going on about that's not true and white people are... He didn't actually say white people are being discriminated against, but he kind of implied that, that Cyril must tell us all that jobs are available for everybody and race doesn't matter. And I just wanted to give my opinion on his comment. And my opinion is that in South Africa, race does matter. And maybe it will be possible in 50 years or 100 years' time that the president can come out and say race does matter. And I believe that point will arise when every black person in South Africa can say that, listen, for me, in my situation, there are no more legacy issues, and actually race doesn't matter. And if every black person in South Africa of their own volition was to feel that race does not matter to them and their progress in life, their opportunities, the environment they found in, that won't matter, then actually we can say that. So that decision can't be recommended by white people because white people aren't the ones that feel the discrimination. It has to come from black people. Mm. And the analogy I'd like to give Andrew is to say that, a month or two ago, there was a women's march in Sandton, right?
Yes.
A couple of months where a whole lot of women came out and said, violence against women, let's stop. Will it be Me Too next campaign banging on the drum? Now, would Andrew go into that march and tell all of those women, listen, girls, gender doesn't matter. The president must tell us that gender doesn't matter because there are no laws discriminating against women. We live in a free country. Women have equal opportunity. Girls go to school. And in fact, the reverse discrimination is happening because some women are getting more opportunities than men because the BE legislation encourages companies to buy products from women-owned companies. So there's a few men now who have it a little bit more difficult because da-da-da-da-da. Mm-hmm. And actually, girls, the most important thing is for us to say that gender does not matter. Now, no one in their right mind would say that because the women who were marching there will tell you that gender does matter. And the fact that all of those women, the thousands of them who were banging on drums and marching with placards, were not born with a penis, actually makes their life less safe. And that is just the reality of this, of this,
absolutely.
Of the situation.
Absolutely.
And even 100 years' time, all the women in the country can tell you, listen, there are no more legacy issues. My gender doesn't make any difference to me. Now, there are a lot of women in the country, for example, for whom their gender does not make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
So there are a lot of women who do not feel that their gender, you know, is a negative issue for them. And that's great. And I think there are a whole lot of black people who possibly feel that actually my gender, my race is not a problem for me, which is great. And the more we have, the better. But the truth is that there are a lot of women, there are a lot of black people who fundamentally feel and believe that because of where we are, it makes a difference.
Mm.
And that is why.
Mark, let me add two things to what you are saying. And I really appreciate your usefully lengthy and full explanation. And if that gentleman still doesn't get it, after the excellent engagement with my very clever and thoughtful colleague, Joanne, then I'm afraid, you know, there's nothing more not to be said, because then obviously he's beyond the pale, no pun intended. But two things, and they one is slightly parenthetical and one is more to the heart of what you are saying. Firstly, to the heart of what you are saying, it is not only about who is allowed to say we can now stop indexing discrimination against gender and race. You are right to say black people will tell you when they no longer feel a certain way about how they experience this land, and analogously women. But actually, Mark, it's not just about subjective reporting of how we feel. It's about objective data. So even if, as a man or as a white person, you do not think that you should take a vow of silence, which I do not think you need to, go and look at the numbers. And this is the point the gentleman before you missed. There is a very easy and obvious explanation for why men dominate boardrooms and why white people dominate middle management and top-tier leadership within business. And unless those numbers change dramatically, you cannot say that race or gender no longer matter. So quite apart from respecting the subjective reporting of survivors of prejudice, pay attention if you think you are as clever as you are as a white person or as a man, why don't you pay attention to the objective data? That's the first point. And then the slightly parenthetical point is, I think it's wonderful to have a white ally in conversation with another white person so that us as black people, for once, do not have to do the heavy lifting. So please do continue to engage white South Africans. If you are white South Africans who, quote unquote, get it, just like a man, if you get it, sit in a men's circle or sit in a circle with other white people and have these conversations, because quite frankly, the victims and the survivors of both misogyny and racism need a little bit of a break discursively. Thank you, Mark.
Thanks, you see this.
Cheers, beautiful call. Nazarene, good morning. Thank you so much for holding on.
Good morning, Eusebius. I just want to say I love your show. I love that you're such a feminist, and I feel I'm a gender survivor. I'm a small Indian woman. I'm an actuary. I'm working in a professional environment. And Eusebius, I've worked in the UK and I've worked in South Africa. And you can't believe the number of slights I have experienced as a woman. And it's been my male colleagues who have told me what's happened behind my back, the attempts from other white men to block my progress because they couldn't believe or couldn't accept that a small little Indian girl could be more successful or better than they were. And I also want to say that I tried to be an engineer. I'm 50 years old, but I didn't do technical drawing at school because only boys could do technical drawing and women had to do cooking. And it was too big a jump for me at university to make that transition. So
I'm sorry to have to say the obvious to men who do not want to get it. It's not Mother Nature that decided you'd be better at cooking a curry than drawing. It is men who decided that Nazarene would be better at cooking and sewing than technical drawing. And so to pretend that there's a scientific explanation for why she has a propensity for serving us wonderful curries is absolute BS. It abdicates our responsibility as men to come to terms with an accidental, not even accidental, a deliberate history of re-inscribing our hegemony into contemporary society.
Yes, absolutely. I didn't want to be cooking curries. I wanted to be doing other things. I wanted to be building buildings.
Absolutely.
And on the point about women not being as good at music, at the end of the day, even in the UK, where they have theoretically greater access for women, the women still do the majority of the housework.
Absolutely.
So by the time a woman sits down on the couch, she's probably too exhausted to play with music. Whereas, look, I'm probably being very ugly here, but I do think that men then have more time to play with music. For me, that's playing, because I'm just too exhausted to do something like
beautiful
that at the
point.
End of the day after looking
beautiful
after my
beautiful point.
Children.
Thank you, Nazarene. Stunning, stunning, stunning.
I just want to make one more point.
20 seconds.
To you women out there, please do not assume that I'm a missus. Men do not have to disclose their marital status. Why do you assume that I have to?
Thank you so
and
much.
That I'm a missus.
Thank you for that.
Thank you, Eusebius. I love you.
I love you more. 28 minutes before 10. 702. Open line. 26 minutes before 10 o'clock, it is an open line. Still coming up on the show, we speak to the SARS commissioner who joins me in studio between 10 and 11. He has a vision and a strategic plan for getting SARS to be fit for purpose again. How is he getting on with it? We'll ask him that question as well as all of your questions between 10 and 11 in the second hour of the show. 702. Open line. Thomas, the tank engine, how's it?
Hi, hello, Sibius.
Yebo.
Yes, yes. Actually, you know, I'm somehow concerned about our SOEs, especially this FAA, the way it operates actually. Because, you know, looking at FAA is the entity which is operating on case basis, and then yet it is now threatening to retrench almost 900 employees. So it is worrying on that issue because of at some point it is getting some funds from the government. So I don't know what is happening in there. Maybe I don't know what are the auditors saying about this issue actually, like to find out on this.
Yeah, you and me both, Thomas, and that's an issue I want to come back to. I've got nothing to say to you. Like you, I share that concern about the state of our state-owned entities and what's happening at SAA, the revenue losses as a result of the strike. But at the same time, I also, I don't know about you, by the way, do you have sympathy for the workers? I kind of do as well. And at the same time, I also worry about what the impact will be, firstly, on the workers themselves on a striking no work, no pay basis, even though it's a legal strike. And of course, also the, not just the inconvenience, because that's minor if you are traveling over the weekend, but the economic impact on the business and on the economy when a strike goes on. What are your thoughts on that strike? 011-883-0702. And where does your sympathies lie, if you have any? Glenn, good morning.
Hi, Eusebius. Every time I listen to you, I think I'm going to go into road rage when I listen to some dimwit phone in and let's... Yeah, sorry, let me just go back a step here. This Richard character, his opinion of things, I would like to just display a few things with a bit of fact. A lot of research has been done about composers. Let's start with his focus area, composers and music.
Mm-hmm.
And the reality is that the composers back in the days, the Bachs, the Mozart, et cetera, the reason that those composers there is because they had the ability to compose 1,000 pieces every year, every 2 years, of which two or three of those became unforgettable and to this day last. And that same happens in the popular culture where composers are allowed, and the more you do it, and that's research-driven, you can read it up in Adam Grant's originals, and you can read it through there, and it's all about the opportunity. The reason that women didn't get the opportunity to become a Mozart was simply because they didn't have the opportunity to sit behind a piano in a fluffy skirt or a fluffy dress.
Beautiful point.
Composed. It was just not something that was done.
Yeah.
And I think that sometimes, you know, let's put biology aside, and let's put race aside and everything else again, and one thing that we keep forgetting as without being politically correct, and it's not the intention, and as you mentioned it in her comments as well, what we forget is that opportunity and the ability to have the opportunity to progress is what underlies the problems we have and the discontent that we have. It's got it's obviously the opportunities were based on race and on gender and all of that. A woman doesn't have the opportunity to feel safe to walk in the street. A woman doesn't have the opportunities that a man has simply because society, and specifically our society, has not afforded them those opportunities. The reason why we don't have many people in our upper echelons from management in terms of people of color and women, etc., is because in many instances, the opportunities to groom with 20 years experience just never happened. And until we learn and realize that it has got nothing to do with, it's the outcome of race and gender, but it has got nothing to do with, it's got to do with the fact that people were not given the opportunity because of something out of their control. And we need to realize that if we want to progress further.
Glenn? Beautifully put. You're almost as smart as some of the women that I know.
Not yet, but I'm working on it. Give me the opportunity.
But you see, Glenn, here's the thing, right? Everything you say, I agree with. I want to push it further. Not a deeper point, it's an and point. I think we must also talk about what makes us uncomfortable to acknowledge what you have said. As far as I'm concerned, what you are saying is obviously true, but the obvious truth is being rejected by beneficiaries of hegemony and domination. And the question becomes, why do we do that as men? Why do, if I was white, why do we do that as white people? Why do we do that as able-bodied people? And I think there we need to do some self-examination and play Dr. Phil on ourselves. And it's this weird belief that every single thing that is on my CV as a man is because of solely a combination of innate potential and massive monumental individual effort. And that is a spectacular lie, and I'm scared to face that lie, because I'm going to have to recognize the role that injustice and luck have played in my journey, even if I put in the proverbial Malcolm Gladwell 10,000 hours. And we fear acknowledging that where we have landed up in the social landscape is a complex of effort, biological potential endowed randomly by Mother Nature, plus being beneficiaries of certain forms of historical privileges and unearned benefits. And we are really, really, really scared to acknowledge that when we are the beneficiaries, because we have internalized the lie that our achievements are purely based on merit.
Correct. You answer your own question. What is it that is stopping us? I'm a 40-something old white male. My kids, boys, white male, and I can tell you now that 99% of white males in South Africa, the biggest thing that's holding anybody back from admitting that there's a problem is fear. Fear, because the realization that unless I do something radical, I've got to let go of the controls that I've experienced and the benefits that I've had. And what does that mean for me in 20 years' time? Does it mean that I'm going to be like my father or like mothers where they've been retrenched because of restructuring? Does it mean I'm going to have to give up my position on the board? Does it mean that I'm going to... That fear is something that we need to realize, and we need to figure out how to work around. And we actually need a counseling session for a white male on the radio for where we can sit around for 3 hours and deal with how we're going to get away and get through this fear that we have of letting go. Because until that happens, until we can get rid of that fear, Eusebius, we are here again in 25 years' time talking about opportunities and fear.
Absolutely. Will you marry me?
No, my wife will be jealous, so I'm going to give that a skip.
I think my boyfriend will be happy that you've turned me down. Thanks, Glenn.
Cheers.
What a beautiful call. Stunning. I just want to sit here, bottle it, and send it to John Steenhuisen and to Helen Ziller. They'll probably deliberately drop it. Nari, good morning.
Yeah. Hi, Eusebius. How are you doing?
Everything. Happy, content, moved, delighted, all of the above, some of the above. How are you?
I'm doing fine, but every time when I listen to your callers, Eusebius, people, they always whine about everything. Myself, I believe in a self-help world that God is for all of us. You know, you have to help yourself. This is a cutthroat world, you understand? You have to do something about your life. Anyway, my point, Eusebius, I just want to say, to talk about this thing of investors. Who is important? Is it investors or the people want to have shares in these investors' companies or to give few black people jobs as managers? And so, of course, when you look at this situation, you see, yes, for example, if a person comes from UK or America and that person say, look, I'm going to employ, say, 10,000 black people, right? But I'm not going to make a black person a manager, or I'm not going to give a black person in my share. I mean, a shares in my company, but I'm going to employ, say, 10,000 blacks. So, and then the government, is it going to say, no, if you're doing that, we're not going to allow you to invest. So, and then who's losing there? I think it's the people there. Those 10,000 people, they could have got a job. I mean, than just giving three black people, one to be a manager, one to be a supervisor. I think the problem is there, you see, that we need to, I mean, to find out what is it important. Is it to cater for those people who are looking for jobs, or is it to give few black people jobs as managers and chefs?
Okay, good point. Thanks, Nari. Throw it out there. Anyone want to engage? What are you saying? Whose interests should we regard as the most paramount when you think about how investments are made? Love to hear from you. 011-883-0702. Khaleboy, good morning.
Good morning, Eusebius. How do you do this morning, sir?
I'm extremely well, thank you, sir. How are you?
Eusebius, I'm not so well. Eusebius, you know what? Ever since I tuned into your show, I have learned a lot. I take down notes. And I just thought it would be an honorable thing today to call you just before I call it quits. You see, I'm a 37-year-old. I'm suffering from a drug addiction, right? And now how I'm doing this is I grew up as a confused young man. I grew up abused. I'm still confused at 37. You see, I've got three boys whom I don't even know how to look at them. They love me so much, and I know that I would not be the father that they deserve in the future, if there is a future. You see, the reason why I'm calling and I'm calling out to the nation is that I'm about to do something absolutely out of this world. I'm about to call it quits. Everything that I do turns to be wrong. I've got no position in this life. I've got no self-identification. Eusebius, what's the reason for me to carry on? I don't want to do this anymore, Eusebius. It is. I'm trying my utmost best. I'm alone in this. There's nobody that I can talk to. There's nobody that understands what I'm going through. I'm always looked down upon. I'm calling you that I'm an idiot. I'll never amount to anything. And this comes from my parents. Hello?
Who do you live for? Do you live alone, Khaleboy? Talk to me. Whatever you do, just talk to me a little bit. Tell me more about yourself. Do you live alone? Do you live with your kids? Do you live with your parents?
I had to get rid of my kids because they couldn't see how I'm living. I'm living alone, Living alone.
And when you say people look down at you, who are you referring to? Is it your folks? Who gives you that kind of message?
I'm referring to my folks, the people that I've always grown up looking up to. They've told me many times that they're throwing down the towel. They don't know what to do with me. Therefore, I will see. Let me go there. They send me out to the shaft and see. I will learn on my own. They want nothing to do with me. Which I understand, completely understand, Eusebius. Everyone has to find their own way. But I think, too, if every time I'm heading that direction, stumble blocks come. And that sets me back. Every time. I've never held on to anything, Eusebius, for more than a year. I've got no mental consistency. I'm not saying that I'm right. I know I'm wrong. But can we get, can somebody maybe say, hey, this is, let's try and go this route in life, you know? You know, or the, if there's a second chance, I'm willing to take it. But if there's no more, I'd like to say thank you very much for teaching me all the lessons that I've learned, that you've taught, you know, through me listening to your station.
What are you, are you working? What do you desire for? Hale Boy, just speak to me. It's very difficult, and I commend you for your bravery. I'm with you. I do not know you, but I feel a deep connection to you. What do you want for yourself? What is your deepest desire for yourself?
What I want for myself, you see, is to be a better person. Not even a better person. I want to change completely. I want to be a part of this world. I want to take position in this world. I want an identification. You see, yes, I want to strive for something. I want to live for something. I'm unemployed. I've been unemployed for about 4 years. You know, that's another difficulty for me, in order that I cannot be, I'm not unable to provide for my kids. You know, the only strength that's keeping me going on is my firstborn. He keeps telling me, what about my right? He has no idea.
Okay, breathe for me, okay? So just breathe for me, Hale Boy. I want to say a couple of things to you, and just listen to me a little bit. Firstly, I feel your pain deeply. I can't magically fix your deep inner pain and turmoil and your life and your complicated journey where you are situated in Alex. But I want to say a couple of things. Firstly, I do not trivialize at all the depth of your pain. I know that we often say, live for your kids, live for yourself, don't think about doing anything crazy. But I want to say to you, I completely understand how you are processing this tough question. What is the point, and why is it worth me continuing? But I want you to hold on. I want you to hold on for me. I and my producers will be there for you. And I want you to make me one small promise, not a big promise, just a small promise. Just promise me that after you and I have spoken in the next 2 minutes and I hand you back to my producers, I'm not robbing you of a deep, personal, autonomous choice that you must make for yourself about your life. Whatever the choice you make, but just promise me that you will allow me and my team to connect with you. Do you promise me that you'll allow me that opportunity?
I allow you that opportunity, seriously.
Okay, that's what I want to do for you. The other thing I want to do is I want you to just listen for 1 minute, then I'll put you back to my producers, because we've got another caller, another stranger, a fellow member of the 702 community. I do not know them at all. Carwin, who's called in. Carwin, you've called in. Like many people, you are deeply moved by Hale Boy's call to me. What do you want to say to him?
Yes, I went through a similar situation sometime in the early 2015. I got divorced. My mom was very sick. I had personal issues at work. I was not okay. But my boss, I must stress, who was the white guy then, referred me to a psychologist, all right? And I went through some psychological sessions, and I spoke to a psychologist who helped me a lot. I think the guy, I'm willing to refer him to our psychological services at work. It's free, all right? They'll give him 5 sessions, all right? That 5 sessions will be for a period of 4 weeks. And then I'm telling you, Mr. Bias, I think that will help. I think the guy is cut. He's going through a difficult time, but he must not lose hope.
There's
always light at the end of the tunnel, and I'm grateful that he managed to phone. But the fact that he's willing to talk to you, you see, it shows that he needs help, and he's looking for help. And we, as the 702 community, we will try to help. Please, I gave your producer my number,
okay?
And I can refer this, you know, to the psychological service that we have at work. It's free for you know, for two or three members of your family or friends if they're in serious
problems. Cohen, thanks for calling in. Thanks for your love, your empathy, your generosity. Kaleboe. My heart goes out to you. I'm going to put you back to Laura. Just give me a little bit of time. That's all I'm saying. I, as you know from listening to my show, I've got very unorthodox ideas about life, about meaning. The fact that you are having thoughts, and let's be honest about them, even suicidal thoughts, I know that you want the pain to go away, and I will not trivialize that. But I want you to just make me a small promise. Just give us a chance to connect with you and take it minute by minute and hour by hour. Yeah?
Okay, sir.
Okay. Thank you, my brother.
702. Open line.
Hill Marie, good morning.
Hi. I'd just like to say that I really appreciate this gentleman for reaching out and talking about this topic that many people still believe is a very taboo topic. And I've been through the same things that he's been through. I've been through the same emotions. And I understand the depth of the situation. And I just want to say that I really appreciate this gentleman for reaching out, breaking the silence, letting people know, people that feel exactly the same way that he feels. Isolated and alone and don't know how to get help and don't know how to reach out. And I just want to say thank you and that I really, really appreciate that he took the time to reach out and just speak about this for all of us that has experienced.
Absolutely. Thank you, my darling. Thanks for your compassion. Mandla?
Hi, Sidious. Thank you for taking my call. You see, this, I just want to say to Kaleboe that many of us have been through the same situation as he is. I have been to many situations in life, but naturally I'm a person who's able to pick up pieces after falling down and move on. But this year has been the hardest one for me. I've been exactly in the same position that he has been into, that he's now into. And I've come back to work because in my workplace, it's horrible. I work for a Chapter 9 institution that I'm not going to mention. I have been there, but he must know that it's not every storm in life that has come to disrupt or destroy you, but some storms in life are there to clear your pathway. Recently, 702 published something about the death statistics in Johannesburg, and the biggest number was about 900 for suicidal deaths. And I don't want Kaleboe to be part of that statistics. He must just say, how could we help him?
Absolutely.
Because I know the path better because I've been through that. Can I just throw a lifeline to him? He must just say, then we can, all of South Africans, we've got beautiful South African people here who are always willing to help, like myself, who want to throw a lifeline to him.
And that's the beautiful thing, Mandla. We have profound differences that divide us. But the one thing that is one of the most beautiful things about our country is that we galvanize across difference when we need to.